This podcast is brought to you by the Legarten Institute. I'm Sian Hansen, Executive Director, and we hope you enjoy this conversation.
This evening's lecture is the latest in a series of events associated with the Roads to Freedom, a lecture series at the Legarten Institute that sails under the banner of the Culture of Prosperity Programme. And here to talk about her lecture this evening is Julia Payton-Jones, who has just finished a triumphant period as director of the Serpentine Gallery. Julia, your title is Thinking the Unthinkable. So what was unthinkable at the start of your tenure?
I suppose this idea that you can transform a former tea house in Kensington Garden, which is the size of a large private house, but nevertheless it's on the domestic scale, and turn it into an international site for the presentation of not only visual art, but also architecture and design, with a very extensive education and public programs. On the face of it, it's an unlikely building to have presented some of the greatest art of our time, and also some of the greatest thinkers and writers, filmmakers, and so on. And I think one of the things that I find so fascinating about it is that the scale, rather than being a great disadvantage, is in fact a great advantage, because it makes you think and have to think very, very hard about not only how you can use a building, but how we can now use the surrounding park, which for many years we were unable to touch.
And was this great scheme fully thought out when you started in office?
Or no.
Did it grow?
Well, of course it grew. And I started my life as an artist. And when you're an artist, one of the processes of making art is that you do something, you look at it, and you think, what do I need to change? So that process of looking at the Serpentine and saying, okay, well, how does this look to me? And then doing something and going backwards and forwards all the time to see how it could be improved and developed, expanded, was very much part of my thinking. And indeed, if after 25 years I wasn't stepping down, I would still be going through that process now. So if I was starting my time again, I have a whole list of things that I know need doing and I would love to do. But of course, that's my successor and the next 25 years, the next 150 years. In a time where culture in this country has never been more fascination to the public, and we are, of course, a not-for-profit, we're a public institution, now attracting up to 1.2 million people in any one year.
Now, the beginning of this great period of success did reflect, I would suggest, an example of the person and the moment, the person and the times coinciding to happy effect, because it's the 1990s and it's cool Britannia, and Britain suddenly discovering that it was not just great and very, very old, but also rather new and contemporary.
Well, I put the development of contemporary art in all its manifestations in this country down to the Frieze exhibition, which, as you know, was organized by Demian Hirst and others when they concluded their period of studying at Goldsmiths. And that exhibition, which I'm so glad I saw, was really a fist in the eye for all museum people, all collectors, everybody in the arts in this country, because what they did was something very, very radical, which was to completely take their final show as an opportunity to present a real tour de force, not of their work, but also their work presented in an extraordinarily professional context. It was in a warehouse site, but everything about it was at the highest level of presentation, and also the work was incredibly good. And that raised the bar for everybody in the sector, and also showed me that if you don't like the system, then you invent your own. And it was a very, very inspiring lesson, and one that I absorbed very well.
And periods of great creative, contemporary endeavour often involve re-examining the assumptions on which things have been done thus far, whether in terms of an institution or a body of work or an art form. And in the 1990s, Britain being the home of the scientific revolution, the agricultural revolution, the industrial revolution, mm-hmm. was suddenly the home of a big artistic renaissance.
Yes, a revolution without bloodshed, really. And certainly a renaissance. And, of course, we'd really been a bit in the doldrums since the 60s. And also quite insular, islanders, I think, really. And so the whole thing burst open. But it was also a virtuous circle because artists can't exist on their own, no matter how brilliant. The museum world had to come with them, the commercial galleries, the public, and also the collectors. And what developed over the next 10 years was an extraordinary transformation in each single area, which made it incredibly exciting. I think one of the things that's always been notable about this country is, whilst we have government funding, unlike the US, it's now very modest in it's severely reduced to perhaps the 80s. And the need to attract additional support for all institutions meant that the connection between philanthropists' business became much closer, whereas before it was much more at arm's length.
Well, it's a remarkable evening tonight, Julia, because the Culture and Prosperity Programme has been going on, developing very happily for the past 3 years, and doing lots of work in contemporary culture and historical research, scientific research. But this is the first time that we've had an event exclusively devoted to the visual arts. So your lecture is a bit of an inaugural for a new phase in the history of the Prosperity Culture. And thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you, sir, very, very much for inviting me. I feel very honoured to be part of this very distinguished group of people who've talked here. And I'm delighted to have the opportunity. Thank you.
It's going to be huge.
Thank you very much.
To hear more podcasts from the Legatum Institute, please visit our iTunes channel or website at www.li.com.